Hey, Dave here from the Breakfast with Manny podcast, which comes from when my co-host Emmanuel, also known as Manny, and I used to meet regularly for breakfast. When we were discussing the shifting landscape of manhood, mostly by sharing our experiences and our struggles, as well as my coaching courses and my entrepreneurial experience, we realized many men could benefit from discussing these topics. So Breakfast with Manny is going to explore the unseen patterns that sabotage men from realizing their potential, healing, and getting the life, sex, career, and health they want, leading to a healthy masculine life. All right. Hey, everybody. I hope all's well. So welcome to Breakfast with Manny. I'm here, of course, with Manny. Hey, Manny, how you doing, bud?
Hey, Dave. I'm doing really, really well. Happy to be here. We have an awesome guest that I haven't had the chance to really talk a lot to. So Sean, be ready for a lot of questions. And really happy to be here.
Cool. And Sean, so we're with Sean Cook today. Sean, so great to have you with us. We're going to be talking about sex today, which everybody loves. Let's do it. Could you introduce yourself to the audience first, if you don't mind?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Sean Cook, and I am a men's coach. And I've been deep in men's work, really, because it saved my life. And it means so much to me to be able to work with men on all of the shit that comes up for us. And sex is one of the big three that always comes up, right? It's sex, money, and parents. Those are the big three that we all have hang-ups around. I've been deep in men's work for, like, men's work leadership for the last 5 years or so.
Okay.
And it just lights me up. So I'm really excited to talk about it and just keep doing my thing and keep working with men and helping facilitate men that will make this world a safer place for our kids, for our future generations, and for each other and all the women in the world.
I love that. That's awesome. Sean, would you be willing to share a little bit about your life that needed to be saved? I mean, Manny and I've shared lots of stuff. Could you give us a little on that?
Absolutely. I will preface this by saying I would never have self-identified as being someone who's depressed.
Okay.
However, looking back, my 20s, I can verifiably say that I was depressed and suicidal as hell. Like, I would literally some years not have an hour go by where I didn't think about killing myself.
Wow.
And at the same time, I was the happy-go-lucky guy. Things just roll off my back and all of this. And looking back, I'm like, Jesus, there was a lot of coping going on. Yeah. And I tried to kill myself twice.
Okay.
And what got me out of it, and it's a journey that is still ongoing, was men's work, was sitting with men and speaking my unadulterated truth, uncomfortable truth to them, and having them also slap me on the side of the head and pull it out of me sometimes. It was not a very comfortable journey, and it was the best journey that I am still on.
Awesome. I'll just share with you. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Manny. You go first.
Yeah, I'm just curious on this quickly. How did you find that path and that journey? Did you meet someone? Did it come from yourself? Did you go to a seminar? I'm curious about, because I know there's a lot of guys who are in a situation that's very difficult, and sometimes they're looking for kind of like that that way. So I'm curious about, how did you find that path?
Yeah. I was extremely lucky that my younger brother was the one who got into men's work before me. And I saw him transforming before my eyes. Like, really just feeling like more himself, feeling like the quality of our interactions just, like, skyrocketed. He was interested. He was interesting. And his life was just going really well. And all of this, despite the fact that he joined this men's group that he told me he wasn't allowed to talk about what happened in it. And I'm like, did this guy join a cult?
Right.
Because confidentiality is such a huge thing in men's work, right? Because we talk about the real shit that goes on. And so I would ask him, like, what do you guys do? He's like, can't talk about it. Like, he joined a fucking cult. And, you know, I think it was about a year and a half later that finally my life blew up. And I was like, oh, I got to give this thing a try because it's working for him.
Yeah. Sean, it's funny, like the parallel, my life blew up and somebody just gave me a book. And in that book was a men's group. The guy hosted a men's group. And I went to the men's group deep in shame and like deep. And I'm sure you were the same. And then I heard guys saying the exact same shit that I was feeling and thinking. I'm like, what? You mean I'm not the only piece of shit here? Like, what? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And then the healing begins. So thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate it. So before we dive into sex, which everybody wants to hear about, I do want to ask you, here on Breakfast with Manny, we're all about promoting healthy masculinity. All this talk around toxic masculinity, we want to aim on something higher. Mm-hmm. To you, when I say the term healthy masculinity, what comes to mind? What's that for you?
I want to sidebar really quickly.
Sidebar me. Yeah, hit me.
And say thank you for asking about masculinity and not what it means to be a man.
You're welcome.
Because I hear so many people asking and having the conversation of what does it mean to be a man?
Right. But
I personally think that's the wrong question, right? Because then we start looking at the Arnold Schwarzeneggers, the Johnny Depps, the whoever it is that you're like, that is a representation of a man. And we're talking about how do we get there instead of how do we talk about what it means for my masculinity to be fully expressed in a healthy way.
Love that.
And so thank you for asking it in that way. And what is healthy masculinity? I mean, I could talk for probably 2-3 hours on what is healthy masculinity mean, but really it means to me knowing myself deeply,
mm-hmm.
knowing my shadows, i.e. the things that I try to keep hidden both from myself and from society, and being able to ride the waves with all of it, right? A man, a person who is in his or her strong masculinity, because I believe masculinity and femininity are energies that we all embody, is someone who knows their danger
mm-hmm.
and doesn't wield it unless needed. Someone who is willing to be of service to something greater than themselves and willing to be uncomfortable to do that, as well as someone who's willing to drive the bus, so to speak. Healthy masculinity is willing to have a vision and make it happen. So, like I said, I could probably talk for hours and, you know, I had words like powerful and all of these things come into my mind, but really the fully expressed healthy feminine is just as powerful, right? So
right.
I tried to kind of pare it down there for, for you guys.
I love that. Cool. Manny, before I go over to you, you work with men a lot. Let's get into sex. It's sex time. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see comes up as patterns, as problems with sex? Or what are you seeing around sexuality in men these days?
I mean, shame is the root of most of our problems.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, the most common thing that I hear from men in my men's groups is, oh, I didn't think that I was, or I thought I was the only one struggling with that.
Right.
And most of our problems come from that, whether they be shame around erectile dysfunction and like sexual performance, shame around pornography and masturbation, shame around the things that we're interested in. Some people call them kinks. Some people call them other things.
Right.
But really everything, like, and it's wild that everything is on the table. Everything is on the table. And like, if you can think it, not only is there probably a porn about it, but there's also someone who's ashamed about it.
Right.
And so like, guys haven't had a place to talk about sex other than six beers deep at the bar and be like, oh yeah, I fucked that broad real good. Yeah. And that's not a real conversation about sex.
Nope.
So I think most of the problems stem or with their intimate partners, which there's all sorts of friction and tension there as well. But yeah. So like most of our problems just come from a place of, I have these things I'm embarrassed about, feel shame about, have problems with, or really like, and don't know if I should like it. And I got no one to talk to about it. And it's amazing what happens when we start talking.
Cool. Manny, over to you, bud.
Well, I look around in my circle. It's always the easiest, actually the difficult conversations happen in the settings you just gave as an example, Sean. We're having beers and it's really easy to open up when we're drunk or etc. In your experience or in your circle, how did you allow or how did you approach this so that guys would open up and talk about this? Dave and I talk a lot about being able to have that circle to, you know, say it's okay to not be okay, and then this is how we grow together. But I know for a lot of guys it's very difficult to do that. So I'm curious in your experience. So how did you approach this? And do you see guys in your circle being now more open to talk about these things without drinking?
Guys are hungry to talk about it. But how we get there is that we build trust first.
Yeah.
Right? We don't have a first meeting and go, all right, guys, what's all your kinks? And let's talk about how many times you haven't been able to get it up in the last year. We build trust. And that trust is built week in and week out when we meet. And we talk about all of our shit. And guaranteed, within 3 months of starting a new group, someone's going to go, when are we talking about sex?
Yeah, sure.
Right? Guys are hungry to talk about it in a way that they can just unburden. Because I think most guys feel the weight of needing to perform or not having any sex or being the playboy. And they're like, I don't know if I want to be a fuckboy anymore. Right? Like, and so the simple answer to your question is we sit with each other and we build trust. And once the trust is there, then we can really start going deep.
Yeah. You brought up porn. I mean, I think we got to hit that for sure. So like, it's interesting you brought up the porn and masturbation. Actually, I'll kind of blend the two together a little bit. Porn has become so ubiquitous, and there's young men now that have, you know, I didn't grow up with that kind of porn. Like I grew up with, I'm old enough for Playboy centerfold, right? You know, oh my God, my buddy's dad has them hidden under, let's take a look, and centerfolds. And like, I no talk about sex. I learned, no one ever really talked about it back in my day, but porn is so ubiquitous now. And you hear stories of young men that can't get it up anymore because being with a normal woman instead of a woman who does look so fake. But the masturbation too, I noticed, I did get in deep with some guys that we had a lot of trust. And one guy said, he's definitely worked on this. And he said, like, I've turned masturbation into like, he said, most guys, and he goes, for most of my life, I've just masturbation something to get over with. Mm-hmm. It's a little shameful. Like can I just get off and get over it versus self pleasure. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you do some talk around self pleasure, pornography for the next little, next little bit.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many layers to this, but just where you were going with this around the self pleasure is I really like, actually I'll back up. For me, I found my brother's Sears lingerie
catalog
back when I was about 14, and that was my intro to it. And basically since then, I relatively soon afterwards, within a couple of years, found it on the internet, and I would look at porn pretty well every single day, sometimes several times a day. And I found it difficult to masturbate without porn.
Okay.
And yep. I also found it difficult to orgasm with a woman and keep it up sometimes because, like you said, it wasn't the double D's, doing all sorts of weird shit. Right. It was actual real sex, which porn does not portray. Right. But I have come to learn that, like, masturbation and self-pleasure, A, can be an art form.
Yeah. Okay.
And B, like, it's literally training for to be better at sex.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally what we're doing. And if your training involves getting it over as quick as possible and involving only visual stimuli, that's what you're getting better at, right? I say over and over to my men, it's like, we get better at what we practice, and we practice a whole bunch of things unconsciously. This is one of them. So it's like, what are you practicing? Like, are you practicing feeling pleasure? Maybe from just like being with yourself and naked, and like maybe even just blowing on yourself. Not giving yourself a blowjob, but blowing on yourself.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, like, masturbation has become such an easy thing to do with porn. Yeah. And I have a term I use all the time. Procrasturbation happens all the freaking time.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, I'll just tie in real quick, Sean, on that. Like, in some of my somatic work that I do with men, there's that procrasturbation is like an uncomfortable sensation they can't deal with. Mm-hmm. And they just distract themselves. And I always find that fascinating. But yeah, it's that. I mean, I love what you're saying. Like, you're making such a good point. And I just want to add one other thing somatically. Like, most men don't feel or explore their own body. Like, they don't even know their own body at all. So
we've got one pleasure point, and that's the tip of our dicks. And that's not in even remotely true.
Right.
But that's what we're training. Right? That's what we're practicing when we masturbate to porn. It's like, I am going to hit this one pleasure button that I know works really well until it explodes. Yeah. But man, there's so much more to it.
And question on this though, on my end, I've stopped watching porn. It's been a bit now. And with my friends, we have a challenge of like no porn, zero porn, for example. And for me, it has made a big difference. And it comes back a bit to what you said, you know, these very graphic images, and they are meant for us to get done with this as fast as possible. But I was curious for you guys. Of course, we often talk about moderation, and, you know, doing something not too often is not that bad. But would you make a case that porn is outright just bad and not doesn't help us grow and have a better sexual experience? Or would you say sometimes porn is okay?
This is a yes and situation. Like, I think that for the vast majority of people, porn equals bad. And porn can also be a tool, but that gets to happen way later, and probably with a partner. Well, definitely with a partner, if that's something that is part of your practice. But for 98% of us, I would just say, like, porn is just not good for our brain. Right? Porn is not good for our sex. Porn is not good for our brain. Porn is probably not good for our body. And, like, if you think about it neurologically, like, our brains and our unconscious can't tell the difference between an imaginary tiger and a real tiger. If we imagine a tiger well enough, it's going to scare the shit out of us. And one of our main drives, if we go back to primal nature, is to mate with the most attractive mate. And if all of a sudden we turn on porn, our brain goes, great, I've mated with like 18 of the most attractive mates that I could possibly imagine in the world. I'm done for the week. And there goes, like, all of that drive doesn't even know that it's not true, but it's like, cool, we're good. Like, do you know how many babies I just made? Realistically, not.
Yeah. Sorry, you're blunting that masculine force to some degree, right? So I want to tell you guys a quick porn story that I think is kind of funny. So I knew a guy many, many, many years ago who had a job that was incredibly boring. Like, he really did nothing. So he literally watched porn, like, literally all day. And so we're chatting about relationships one day, and he's like, you know, Dave, you know, like what frustrates me, he goes, why can't I just meet a woman who like opens the door, puts me in a chair and blows me? Right. And I'm like, cause that's porn, cause that's not real. And he, you know, and I came up with him. I told him, you know, to his name, I go, hey, Jim, blowjobs are earned, my man. Like, you got to earn them, you know, you inspire them is what I said, actually. Mm-hmm. But I want to actually ask you kind of a funny question that I had thought of this as the title for the episode. I don't know if I have the balls to put it in, but at least it's in the episode. I had this title for the episode, which was like the blowjob graveyard. Where do they go to die? Right. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you for fun. Where do you think, where does oral sex for men go to die? Cause a lot of guys complain. You hear that as a standard trope. Ah, my wife doesn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't get them anymore. What's your take on that?
Comes back to healthy masculinity, right? Like you said, blowjobs are inspired, and they are inspired by who we be, not what we say, not even what we do, even though that brings into it, but it's who we be. And it is inspired by the healthy polarity that a man can create in his relationship. Because just like magnets, if you create a strong polarity, it's going to bring that mouth
down where you want it to be. Where you want
exactly.
It to be.
Exactly. Just like a magnet. And if you don't, it's going to be the opposite of a magnet. It's going to repel them. And I have done my fair share of repelling blowjobs and complaining about not getting enough of them.
Yep. Yep.
And for so sure. It's like, can you love and penetrate the world with who you are and your masculinity and what you're doing in the world in such a way that your woman's like, holy fuck, he's coming home and I've got a chair right by the door for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's going to come from her being blown away by who you are rather than your desire for it.
I love that. Manny, over to you, bud. How you doing over there? You good?
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting what Sean is doing, what's saying right now. What I'm curious about is to get to that, to get to there, Sean, some people will listen to this and they'll probably wonder, okay, cool. Like, I want to get there. Any steps you would recommend? Like, are we talking about self-awareness here first, understanding who you are and then working to build kind of like that that masculinity within you? What do you recommend? Any actionable items here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's almost more than self-awareness. It's like literally getting uncomfortable with yourself and like looking in all the places you don't want to look, which is why having a group of men calling you on your bullshit and asking you uncomfortable questions can be such an amazing tool. Right? Like, I truly believe that men need men to hold them accountable, to sit there and be with them as they're uncomfortable and exploring things that we don't want to explore, but we really do. And it is sharpening that sword. It is sharpening your awareness and your self-control with other men. Like, if people take one thing from this, you know, I have a million book recommendations, but if it's one thing, it's like, find some men, make some conscious time regularly to sit with them and speak your truth and listen for the truth and nail each other to the tree. Like, you're talking bullshit. Let's go. Where's the truth? Like, that is what is going to sharpen who you are and who you be in the world faster and better than anything.
So Sean, you touched on it. I think we really got to go there. Like, you mentioned about this polarity, like, and when we are in that polarity and you feel that, like, that magnets you talked about, how can men create that more? And I know part of the answer is being that healthy masculine, but beyond mm-hmm. that, and how do men kill polarity? How do you see men sort of killing it? What are the mistakes you see?
Yeah. So we get to talk about masculine and feminine and dominant and submissive energies here, because this is what creates polarity, right? And I believe, like I learned it from David Deida, that everybody has masculine and feminine energies within themselves, and we're all our own little balance and expression of them. We come together in a way that completes each other. That's what polarity is like my balance of masculine matches your balance of feminine and vice versa, and that magnetizes. Where this comes into the dominant and the submissive behavior is everybody needs and wants a leader. And that includes guys. And for most guys, that leader that we're wanting is within ourselves. Mm-hmm. For most women, or for most feminine natured beings, they desperately want to surrender and say, you got me, and I trust that. And so the reason why I bring this up, where guys kill polarity over and over and over again, is by going, we'll do whatever you want, babe.
Yeah. What do you want to do? Yeah.
What do you want to do?
What do you want to
you
do?
Decide. You choose.
Exactly. And it is so much better for polarity's sake to say, babe, we're going to this restaurant tonight.
Yep.
That doesn't mean she has to say yes. That doesn't mean you're a tyrant, right? Right. She can be like, no, I don't like that restaurant. Try again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I am a partner dancer, and
yep.
I've taught it in the past. And one of the things that I really love to say is that partner dance is a conversation, right? And whoever is taking the lead role, because the dance that I do is kind of lead follow rather than guy and gal, they get to suggest what's happening. And whoever's the follow, they get to say yes or no. And they also get to be like, oh yeah, I like that. And I'm going to do it this way. Right? That's the same thing. It's like, babe, tonight we're going out for a restaurant, 6 o'clock. Okay. I'm going to say yes to that. And I'm going to dress up and I'm going to make this special. I'm going to bring my feminine juice to this because I trust you.
Yeah.
Because I surrender to you.
I'm going to build on that. You know, I just had this conversation with someone literally yesterday. And what we realized was leading is an invitation.
Yes.
Controlling is not.
Yes.
And I think so many women have had experiences with the shadow masculine where they've been with someone who's tried to control them.
Trying to be dominant.
Dominant, trying to be dominant in the negative sense. But, you know, for the guys listening, I just want to make the point, like leading in the dance, leading in life is an invitation.
Yeah.
It's a firm invitation. It's a strut. You still have your frame. You're like, you know, and you're like, hey, I got this covered. I got you. And they can relax or not, but controlling is a whole different thing. Exactly. And I think that's one of the dynamics that really comes up a lot.
Yeah. So I was just talking with my man about this earlier today. We're talking about the king archetype.
Yep.
And basically the king has this energy of like, I know where I'm going and I want you to come with me if it's your partner or whoever, and I'm okay if you don't.
Yeah.
And I'm okay if you say no. Maybe it's I change plans. Maybe it's I'm still going to do it. When that falls apart, you either turn into a tyrant, which like yeah. What you're saying, the dictator is like, no, this is what we're doing and you don't have a choice.
Right.
Or you turn into the weakling who just doesn't make a choice and says, here you go, babe, you make the choice. And neither of those is attractive.
Yeah, that
and
makes
neither of them
sense.
Build polarity.
Not at all.
I see. I've had conversations with women who have admitted later, deep down, that this is super attractive. A guy who makes decisions and knows how to lead. Again, the approach very being very important here. But at the beginning, are kind of a little bit triggered about being led, and it's difficult for them to allow that to happen. Do you think the way to lead has changed over time? Do you think it has always been the same way, or did we do it wrong before? What do you think about this?
I don't think the way to lead has changed. However, the context from which we do it from has, right? We, as a larger society, have spent the better part of 2,000 years, Western society, of men are dictators. And so that doesn't change the fact that to lead well, right, to be the king that everyone remembers well, leads from invitation, mostly. When shit hits the fan, then it needs to be its own thing. But we're coming into an era when men are no longer the dictators. Men are no longer in control, and that's a good thing. But that doesn't mean that how we should lead has changed, right? And I'll take a step into consent here, right? Is this invitation has to have the ability for the other person to say no. If they can't say no, or you're going to throw a hissy fit, that's not an invitation, and that's not consent. And one of the reasons why women get triggered here is because kind of the bad boy thing. Most young women, when they go for bad boys, guys who are domineering and controlling, it turns them on at first because finally someone's taking control. And all of the love drugs and all of the oxytocin and everything's coursing through the system. So they miss the red flags of this guy's actually an asshole.
Right.
And so rightly so, they're like, maybe I'm going to wait and see if you're an asshole first before I fully surrender. And our job as men is to continue holding the frame of like, I'm here, and building the safety of A, I'm not going anywhere. And B, if you say no, it's a no. And that's okay. I'm going to be okay. I'm not going to throw a hissy fit. I'm not going to try and control you.
Well, and you know, you're raising something really important. A lot of women complain when they do say no, they get into somewhere where then the guy really starts like manipulating and pushing. And so I've always said to men, I recommend like feel into your woman, like feel into the situation. Are you literally coming together? Like I recently just met someone very, very new, but you know, we chatted about this a little bit, about consent, a little bit about stuff, but our first kiss, there was no like, may I kiss you? Because I said a joke in one of our previous episodes, like, can I approach for a kiss? Excuse me. Like, no woman really likes that. But I felt into her like we moved together, right? Like we, and she said, look, like you should be able to tell if I want to kiss you or not. And I think a lot of guys blow through that. And you're right, out of either anger, embarrassment, whatever, undone work inside, they get angry. And then they go into the shadow masculine, you know, oh, come on, I bought you dinner, like that old garbage, right? There's something else about shadow masculine I really want to talk about. And it's always fascinated me how many women, even my age, tell me the following. I'm on a dating app, Dave, and I met a bunch of guys, and I met a professional guy who looks good, feels good, should be good. And we're having a really nice chat. And then out of the blue, I get a dick pic. Right? They're like, what just happened? And I haven't been able to get someone to admit to me. Anyone watching, if you've sent a dick pic, can you send me a note what you were thinking and what you wanted to get, please? But what do you think's going on there with the whole dick pic phenomenon? Unsolicited dick pic.
Yeah. So I love this conversation because it ties directly into porn and also the masculine dominated society that we've already been talking about.
Yeah.
Porn says women are turned on by dicks, period, end of story. Right. That's not the reality. Like, yes, straight women are turned on by dicks in specific circumstances. But we have encouraged, right, the way we've set up our society, we have encouraged women to act in a masculine way, to be masculine, to be successful. And so one of the side effects that I see is that we think that everyone has a male type brain where it goes, oh, titties, I'm turned on. And the female brain doesn't work like that, right? I would bet most men on here, if you're messaging a woman and she sends you a picture of her tits, you're like, fucking A, that's great.
Let's go.
Doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
But for women, like, there are so many layers deeper, right? They don't get turned on by the physical like we do.
Right.
They get turned on by the energetic, by the being, by the who you are, right? It's what we're talking about earning, like not earning, inspiring the blowjob.
Right.
Women need that layer of safety. They need that, ooh, yeah, it hits here. It hits in my heart. It hits in my soul before my body gets turned on. Right. Yep. That is literally why the stereotype of lighting candles and putting roses on the bed is a thing, because that's hitting the soul first.
And even, you know, getting in sometimes, like for women, I've had many women tell me like the mind is so important, right? So a well-placed whisper at the right time does a lot of stuff. Like it's really useful. I don't know where I saw it. I'm just trying to think. I had a thought about, it's escaping me 1 second, man. You got a question? I'm going to rethink of this, but
yeah, of course. But I just wanted to say that, I think most of us have probably seen guys act in certain situations, in a way in which we know they didn't read the room or they didn't understand the body language that the person was giving. So you said before, Dave, like, you got to feel your woman. You got to be able to see also the reactions you're getting. And I wanted to tie back this with what Sean said at the beginning of having a group of guys in which you can say the honest stuff and cut through the bullshit. I feel like it's probably the most efficient way of transmitting that message. Because when you tell a guy on the spot when something like this happened, it's often very defensive. I've done it before. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, no, she was loving it. Like I was doing the right thing, you know? But maybe in that circle in which they're stressed, in which you can give honest feedback to each other, that's where you can maybe help your friends realize, you know, sometimes you're too much. And you see it in the body language of the woman. They're just pushing you back. They don't like it. It's either too aggressive or you're not being, you're just not reading the room, basically. So, yeah. Sean, I like what you said at the beginning. I think this is things that guys can start working on, because being able to lead and the way you lead by also understanding the reaction you get from one, I feel like can get you so far.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll just jump in real quick, Sean. I've remembered something, but I also want to say, I think a lot of guys get it wrong in the sense of they don't understand the being energy as much as the doing and having. They're like, I've had guys that I've coached that are like, but I have it all. I have a Porsche. I have the coolest apartment. I have the nicest clothes. Why am I not? And it's because it's all exterior. It's not that interior frame, that interior integrity. So I just wanted to comment on that.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's most of the guys that I coach. It's like, great, you got it all. And are you happy?
Right.
Yeah, right. Of course I'm happy. I've got it all. It's like, no, like, seriously, like, what's your internal world like?
Right.
Is it satisfied with who you are? Like, are you able to be happy without sitting in your Porsche? Without going million-dollar mansion?
Right.
Maybe it's multi-million dollar to be a mansion these days, but yeah, it's like exactly what you said. It's in your beingness. And to tie it to what Manny was saying, reading the room, not only do you need that honest feedback from guys who say, hey dude, your energy is turning people
creepy,
off.
Creepy. Yeah, you're creepy.
Exactly. You got fuckboy energy that all the women, as soon as you walk in the room, can pick up on it and they're out of there. I've literally seen that.
Yeah.
And from a guy who thinks he's hot shit. But really how you start reading the room is like, can you read yourself?
Exactly.
Can you feel yourself, right? Are you allowing yourself to buy into the lie that the Porsche and the mansion makes you happy? Because most of the time it's no. But guys, like you said, right at the beginning, I would not have identified as a depressed guy.
Right.
Because I didn't get it. I didn't understand what I was feeling, or I wouldn't allow myself to even look at what I was feeling because it was too fucking scary.
Yeah, no, I that really resonates for me. I know I went through a phase where I was like, I thought I had the right clothes and the right job and the right everything, and my romantic life wasn't great. There was a lot of hollow connections and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think we'll talk about that in a minute. I wanted to go back to what I thought of. I don't remember where I read this, but one of my teachers that I read was talking about men don't actually understand what they want from sex. And what he meant was when you're really having connected deep sex and a woman opens to you, like the power of the feminine is the power of the ocean. Like it is overwhelmingly, and the orgasm's actually secondary, dudes. Like mm-hmm. feeling the power of the woman. And he said, and that's why men will even pay for that to watch fake versions of it at a strip joint.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly. Like what? It's the same thing. Whereas women or the feminine energy wants to surrender.
Yeah.
The masculine energy wants to be received. And like when a woman is in full surrender and full receivership, that makes it evokes the beast, the power, the everything that guys say they want.
Yeah.
That feeling of a woman being like, I want all of you.
Yes. That is heroin. That's the heroin. The acceptance part. The like, I want all of you.
Yeah.
You know, guys think, well, it's the coming and coming's great, but it's not that. It's what you nailed it. It's just, oh, I want all of you.
Like,
that's super cool.
I'm to toot my own horn a little bit here.
Sure.
I'm at the place in my practice now that literally I can have sex without orgasming and it be some of the best sex of my life.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, why don't we go there for a second? Because I know there's a lot of men that practice withholding ejaculation. And mm-hmm. for some guys, they're going to be, I've heard of that. And some guys are going to be like, what are you talking about? Sexual energy being retained and, there's tantric sex. And I want to throw something in that I don't want to forget. I want to tell men, be curious about sex. Be a discoverer of sex. Like, just take your
artist,
be an artist. Like, take your woman on a ride. Like, just be curious. Don't just fall into the same old stuff. Right. So, I just wanted to remind them of that, but you know, so like, let's talk about maybe some of the offshoots. Like there's kink, there's tantra, there's non-ejaculatory sex. Maybe just give us a little bit on that to start.
Yeah. I mean, so I have been listening to a book called The Female Brain.
Okay.
And there's one thing in there that stuck out to me. And she's talking about the female orgasm and what it may be for, like, strictly functionally in a very masculine way. There was this one line that just threw away. And it's like, because we all know that the male orgasm is just for procreation. And I was like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Because I know, and even though I said it just earlier about orgasm, I know that orgasm and ejaculation are actually two separate things.
Right.
They can be differentiated. And in fact, they are, but they're so close together that most people can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
And so when we get curious about sex beyond the sex that we are actively having, then we can explore those kind of realms. And this is where multi-orgasms come from. This is where, like, shooting yourself off into space and another world and your partner into another world, that's where it all comes from. And I believe that all of these things, be they kink or nofap or tantra or withholding your energy, all of these things are just tools that largely have been misused, but now people are learning how to use them to explore the depths of our being, really. And like, this is, it's another form of shadow work, of exploring the places that either we're not willing to go to, we can't go to, or whatever. And these practices, be the kink or BDSM or tantra or whatever, they're all ways to explore this. If done with curiosity, with safety, with mentors, something that guys are extremely shy to do about with sex, because we all think we're the shit and that we don't need
We don't need any tutoring. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And what, like, is another guy going to come into my bedroom and watch me? It's like, no, you can learn without that. But getting mentors and learning, those mentors can be just books if you're too afraid of talking to another guy about it. But like, so huge.
Sean, can NoFap make a huge difference in a guy's life?
Yes. And the reason why I paused is that, like I said, NoFap is a tool. And I think that most guys use it wrong.
Sorry, can you just explain NoFap for the people that don't know what it is?
NoFap is essentially a movement, a term of simply stopping masturbation, right? Fapping is another way to say jerking off.
Gotcha.
And it is great in the fact that it generally helps guys stop habitually masturbating, and it helps guys stop watching porn. That's really useful. However, what's missing from it is the key ingredient of learning what to do with that energy.
Oops.
Like, we have sexual energy.
We do.
Period, end of story. And it needs to go somewhere. Otherwise, it's repressed, and it's just like kinking a hose in the rest of our life, right? Like, I believe that we have essentially five essential energies. Joy, sadness, anger, sexual energy, and fear. And if we kink one of them, sexual energy, by NoFap, without learning how to use the energy, it kinks the rest. There goes your joy. There goes your life force. There goes your fear. There goes your anger, and the ability to use them in a useful way. So NoFap can be useful. However, knowing what to do and how to continue moving that energy is an essential skill.
Yeah. And using that sexual energy for you, does it have a correlation with orgasm, or simply the sexual experience?
Neither.
The contact, the
neither.
The experience.
Sexual energy is creative energy, right? What most guys don't get is when they get the urge to masturbate, it's probably the urge, I need to create something. I've got creation flowing through me. And there is, like, literally the energy that is coursing through my body, which there's ways to circulate it. But then all of a sudden you circulate it. You don't have to jack off. And then it's like, okay, what the fuck do I want to create in the world? What do I want to build? Maybe it's paint, make art. Maybe it's make music. Maybe it's, like I'm doing, build a cabin. Like, whatever. Maybe it's going code. It doesn't matter. It's like you are being called to create. And so, like, sexual energy doesn't mean sex.
Right.
But that is a fantastic place for it to go, be that it's consenting and conscious and all of those things.
I love that. I want to comment, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of men, and I would include myself for many years, had no clue around energetics of sex and energies. And then when you start to play with it a bit, it takes you, like you said, I mean, I was very fortunate to have a few rocket ship sort of like, what just happened? I'm in another universe moments, which is super cool. You know, it was really cool. And I would just really encourage guys to, like, start getting curious about sex is more than just two or three acts. And funny story, real funny story, way back, I had a woman I was with who wanted to explore sexual Qigong. And so we go to the workshop, and I learned later, like, she was working with a jade egg in her vagina, which, whatever. And the guy that I went to, I wasn't ready for this because I had done no work. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just open-minded. So he had us, like, take our testicles and, like, absolutely hammer them with two fingers. He was smoking himself. And I didn't know anything of this world. And I was like, holy shit, what the hell's going on? It was really funny. But I just think there's so much out there, and it doesn't have to be BDSM and weird kink, and it can be energy and flow. And there's just another world out there that we can discuss, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's like, I think this is one of the biggest, call it crime.
Yeah. Committed crime.
By, you know, largely the shame of the Christian church, right? Is that sex equals bad, sex equals shame. And it is like, literally, it is only, it has nothing to do with pleasure. It has nothing to do with finding other worlds or different consciousnesses. It is there for procreation. And if anything else, then you are a sinner. Like, mm-hmm. literally, if you go back pre-Christianity, most belief systems or religions even had a sexual practice that was sacred.
Sacred, yeah.
Sacred, because it is so powerful.
Cool. So as we come to the end, I want to finish on something, and I want to tell you guys one of my favorite sex stories. And if you guys have a funny sex story, we're closing with that. Yeah, Manny, you too, brother. I got to tell you guys this story. So let's talk. I'm going to start the ball rolling with my story, which is very early on teen sex, right? So teen sex is like, you have no clue what you're doing. One of your buddies tells you he did something to some girl. You're like, I guess I got to try that. So the woman I was with at the time, the first woman I ever had sex with, was, we had a lot of sex, like a lot. And so she's like, I want to have sex outside. And I'm like, okay. So we go in a park, put a blanket down, and, you know, we're having sex like 16-year-olds do. I'm pretty sure I was pretty linear about it, and I can argue probably with a little bit of speed. And I hear this like tingling, you know, like this like tinkling. And I look over, and there's a dog with dog tags, and there's a leash. And there's this, I swear, he was 85 years old, and he's just standing there watching us. And this is a true story. The guy goes, just keep on going, son, you're doing fine. But I was so clueless as a teen. And so let's talk a little bit about, like, so we'll say teen, 16 to 25 year old sex. Like, what, you know, and Manny, I think this is going to be really good for you too, being younger, like, especially the different era that you grew up in. But Sean, why don't you go first? And then Manny, tell us what you think of your friends and what went on at that age group in that part of your life.
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure it's Jerry Seinfeld said it best. It's like, sex at that age is like a car accident. Like, I don't really know what happened, but there's some moaning and some screeching and some noise coming out, and I don't know how your foot got there and all of this. And it's like, yeah, like you said, it's enthusiastic, yeah, and it's exploratory. Yes.
Okay.
And that's great.
Love it.
And it's okay that it's that, and it's not the most masterful tantric sex, right? Like,
right.
I can, like you said, be curious. Explore. You're young. You haven't done it all. Go and fucking try it out. Like, that's what it's there for. We're meant to explore. We're meant to figure shit out. And yeah, like, I think that I had some great sex for a teenager.
Yep.
And I think probably my girlfriends would say it was great sex for a teenager. And a couple of years later, I learned that that was probably pretty bad sex. And that's okay.
Cool. Manny, what about you? What's your view of that, man? Like, that age group and your experiences or your friends? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with it. A lot of discovery, I think, is usually for that phase. Also, a lot of people who think they know it all at that age, and they just don't, right? So again, it's more experimental than anything. Like, I've been in a relationship for 6 years, right? So on my end, it's been just a lot of discovery, from something extremely simple and vanilla to doing public and then getting caught as well, which I won't get into the details, as my girlfriend's probably gonna watch this and be like, what the fuck are you talking about? But long story short, a lot of discovery. And nice. but I'm curious to learn. I'm curious to develop, to learn more about myself and the power that I have within, to experiment. I'm not sure I'll do that Dave experiment with the smash your nuts. I'm not sure that's my kind of thing, but I'll definitely experiment. Yeah.
I don't recommend that. It actually hurt like fuck. Like, don't do that. So you know, then I think we'll go to the next age group. Like, let's go 30 to 40 kind of thing. Like, for a large majority, or a pretty large majority, that's marriage, kids, and all that stuff, right? So now you've got, exhaustion for the ones who do get married. The ones who don't, they continue on with exploration and doing their thing. I see 30 to 40 as kind of like tired sex. Like you're mm-hmm. like, oh fuck the kids. Like we should really have sex. Like, so I don't know what you guys think about that age group or that era. What do you guys think?
I would love to hear from Manny first on this one, just cause like, you're not there yet. And so like, what are you imagining you're looking forward to?
I like that. Yeah. Manny, what are you thinking?
I think it's I would see it as the middle stage for me. It will also depend on where I am in my life. We don't have kids right now, right? So it's pretty easy. But I imagine 30 to 40 to be a moment in which there's more experience now, in which we can open up more than what we've done before because we know ourselves more. But that we're not fully there where I think 40 to 50 is potentially what I would say maybe where you find that other level, sky level. Hopefully I can live that before, but I know it takes also time to experiment and to know all that stuff. So I'm curious about you guys because you've been through there. So is it that middle ground that you were you able to enjoy it a lot more, 30 to 40? What did you guys think?
I think what Dave said was pretty accurate, though I would take kind of a different perspective on it. It's like, okay, so you've had a bunch of sex and you figured it out. And for a lot of people, it gets to be a recipe sex. I do this, and then I do this, and then I do this, and then I ejaculate. Yeah. And then it's over and I go to sleep. And for the people who are not satisfied with that, it can be wild and crazy. And but I would say that mostly that breaking out of the plateau is largely drunk sex or drug sex.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that like people haven't figured out that, and like I'm just at the end of this era, so I'm still within it. And but from the guys that I've talked to, it's like mostly they haven't figured out that, like, they know that they like sex and they know that sex can bring pleasure and they know how to do it. And they're in the era of that. They haven't really figured out that it can be so much more. And I think that, like, that's the era I'm in, if the changing gears of like, hold on a second, this can be more than functional and pleasurable. Like, we can do different things here.
Yeah, you know, I'll go back to my comment about curiosity. And like, I know so many guys that like, they get a new car, they know every spec, they're researching everything, they know that kind of leather, boom, boom, boom. And sex, there's a laziness around it. There's I love what you said about recipe. And guilty sometimes, for sure, right? Just like, oops, I think we all fall into that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just think it's interesting. As you're getting towards the 40 range, and maybe like Manny, you kind of clued in, you're like the 40 to 50. Here's a couple of things. I think the 40 to 50, because you guys aren't there yet, the 40 to 50, one of the things is you don't give a shit about your body as much anymore. Like, sure, you want to look good and feel sexy, but you're not like, you know, you're not like, oh, I'll do a tricep extension while she puts her arm there. So she, right. You know, you're, oh, I'll puff my chest. Like, you're not too worried about it. I think that, so there's a certain confidence. But one thing I see with like some of my married friends, I'll share one story that I found really interesting. I had one of my male friends complain about lack of sex in his marriage. And I just said, I'm just curious, what do you do about it? And he thought for a minute, and this is true. He just said, like, I don't know, like after 2-3 weeks, I get pretty squirrely. I go over to her and I'm like, hey, what's going on? Like, and so as a joke, I said, oh, so you've made it into an oil change. So, okay, that's cool, as a joke. But I think, again, that inspiration or the curiosity to like, so many men I know want to, like, when they play a sport, they want to get better. When they at work, they want to get better. Sex, they kind of, they're a little limp around it. And the last thing I'll say on this, sex over 50, because I get to talk about that too, having a couple of decades on you guys. I will say sex for some people, like, I've had some of the best sex of my life in the last, I'm 57, and really important,
I think the best sex I've had in the last 5 years was with a woman who was 2 years older than me. So the old, like, you need a young woman and da da da. No, you don't. Oh no.
Yep.
That's a nope. So yep. I want to shout out to, like, the women that are 50 and 60 and 70 and all that and say, like, no, 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 no. Like, I had the best sex I've had in years with a woman who was, I think I was with her when I was not that long ago, but like 55 and she was 57, or I was 56, she was 58. Let's blow that myth up. So there's a couple comments, and then yeah, I'll let you guys comment, and then we'll, I guess we'll look to wrap up, but a couple last comments for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you just said, like the age thing. Sure, the bodies may change as people age, but as you said, like, I mean, even for us men, it's energetic,
right?
Right. And women just get riper.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to comment on what you said about the oil changes and guys not wanting to be better at sex. Well, I think all guys want to be better at sex, but we let our egos get in the way, right? We say, like, oh, I should be the best at sex, and I'm so good, I'm such a stallion, and all of this. And right. It's like, okay, right. Even if that's true, right, to bring it to hockey metaphors, is like, even if that's true, do you want to be a fourth line grinder in the NHL, or do you want to be fucking Sidney Crosby? Because if you want to be Sidney Crosby, go get your, like, calm your ego, calm your tits, and go and learn.
I love that. Manny, Sean, some final thoughts for you? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, man. Before we move on, just because I know some guys will listen to this and will say, that's fucking awesome, what do I do now? Do you have a book or two that you'd recommend? You did mention David Deida at one point, which I think is has an incredible book. But any book or two you'd like to recommend so that the guys can read it and then start taking action?
I mean, around sex, I would say Mantak Chia is definitely the number one person to start with.
Okay.
And he does sexual qigong, and like, he wrote a book called The Multi-Orgasmic Man, which is like kind of a foundation for all of this. There's so much more. But then, you know, going into just generally being a better man, like, no more Mr. Nice Guy is every single man, and most women, I would argue, need to read that book.
I agree.
I mean, there's so many. Those are two great places to start.
Awesome. So, Sean, before we wrap, and this has been amazing, man, thank you so much. Where can people reach you? We're going to put it obviously into the episode credits and stuff, but where, how can people reach you if they want to work with you, or they want to ask you questions, or they want to just connect? Yeah. How can they reach you?
Instagram's the best way. I'm at Sean LD Cook. Okay. And my website got unintentionally blown up, so I'm rebuilding that, and hopefully it'll be up soon. And that's just seancook.com. But for now, it leads to a dead link, and hopefully it'll be up again soon.
Get some creative energy going. Cool.
Exactly.
So, Manny, thanks, buddy. Awesome to see you. Let's remember to tell everybody, hey, we need subscribers. It's really helpful. That's one of our new mandates in season two, that no more negotiations, like, fucking subscribe. Manny, final words, my friend?
No, I just wanted to say, Sean, thanks for coming. This is awesome. Guys need this. They just do. So thanks for coming here. We'll have all the links again, everyone, so you can see, you can find Sean's contact, and hopefully we'll connect soon.
Awesome. Thanks again, gentlemen. Awesome discussion. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
See you all.